All right, so the reason why we are all here tonight. Yeah. So I'd like to introduce our speaker for this evening. And come on up and do it. Joseph M. from Santa Maria.
Oh, my God. My name's Joseph. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive and sober. And you would think that a self-centered individual like myself would just revel in this kind of experience, right? Not going off like that tonight, man. I'd like to acknowledge Daryl, my sponsor, for being here tonight. And man, when I saw Daryl pull up, I was like, oh man, thank God. You know, I'm shooting some of those arrows of self-doubt at myself today. You know what I mean? I just tried to keep busy and not try to think about this kind of thing too much, because you get all wrapped up in what you should say, what you shouldn't say. You know what I mean? It's just, it takes you right out of the moment. You know, it's the only thing it really does. And so I asked Daryl and Darren to pray for me before the meeting, and felt a little better. And I just, I get, to be honest with you, man, I get emotional when I think about Daryl and the example that he's been for me since I got here. And just a God-driven, principle-driven man of recovery that I get to look to as my example of how to conduct myself inside and outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's not just how someone is in a meeting, or, you know what I mean, or one-on-one, but how are they really living out there? You know what I mean? How are they conducting? How are we conducting ourselves out there? And there's a lot of men that I look to for that. There's a lot of them here in this room tonight. You know, Victor, Mike, Billy, you know, Dank, not you, no, just kidding. a lot of men that I look to as examples, and I'm just grateful that you guys are here tonight and share this with me. What you could possibly think I have to add to this, I have no idea, but here we are anyways.
Chuck.
And yeah, Jack, one of those guys. And men too that aren't here anymore, you know, guys like Chief, you know, the Navy Dave, and Gary, Boy Scout Gary, you know, these men that were here when I got here, that I didn't necessarily have an intimate personal relationship with, but I got to watch them and how they conducted themselves, you know. And today that's becoming an ever more present priority in my life, is how am I conducting myself? You know what I mean? How am I really, am I talking this? Am I just speaking the language in a meeting or personally to you, or am I actually walking the talk? You know what I mean? And so I'm grateful that you men are here so that I can not lie too much. But no, I mean, so, you know, just like you hear from so many people that share, it's just like, I never felt like I fit in from the moment I can remember as a child. I just never felt like I fit in anywhere with anybody. You know what I mean? And whether that was at home, among friends, I just could never internally reach the mark that you seem to set externally for me to live up to. You know what I mean? It always seemed like everybody just seemed okay to some degree in their own skin. And I never got that. You know what I mean? I never felt okay. The only time I felt okay was either loaded, or I guess it was a lot of years before I ever really felt okay, because I didn't start getting loaded as a child. But there was a lot of alcohol and other controlled substances. What's up, Josh? There was a lot of alcohol and other controlled substances in and around my house as a child, and a lot of the people that I had growing up with, that my mom in particular was bringing around, were of our variety. You know what I mean? It's like there was a lot of alcohol and narcotics in the house, and I was raised by my mom when I was real young. She moved us down to Palm Springs, didn't know anybody down there, just had to get away as far as she could from my dad. So isolation is a big part of my story, and the characteristics of an isolator, and that seemed to kind of mold me and carry on into early teenage years and lower adulthood years, and I guess I still at times feel very uncomfortably comfortable isolated by myself, you know what I mean? And it still plays a part in me today. And so I guess a lot of so today it's like I make sure that I put in some effort into not being isolated all the time, you know what I mean? Because I know that can end up being a very unhealthy state for me. And so I have to put myself in situations that I'm not always comfortable in to get uncomfortable with things for a while, you know what I mean? Because I know that's where the growth really is. And, you know, so growing up, I guess, you know, into adolescent years, teenage years, started to experiment with some things. I mean, I saw them around the house, take a little drink here, little thing there, whatever. And then, you know, as a teenager in high school, when our senses of insecurity and inadequacies really start to blossom in some of us, when I found alcohol and the effect that provided me, that psychological, that emotional, that physical effect, man, I dove right into that. You know what I mean? It's like the ultimate disconnection. You know what I mean? It's like you could turn the lights off and there's some, you know what I mean? Someone's still home, you know, but nobody knows, you know? And I don't have to, it's like taking a few drinks, man. It's like you write up all your insecurities and your fears on one of those dry erase boards, you know, and then you take a few drinks, a couple hits or whatever, and the board just seems to get erased. You know what I mean? It's like all that stuff just seems to go away. And that's what alcohol and narcotics provided me, man. Narcotics are equally a part of my story as alcoholism, but it started and ended with alcohol, and that will always be my first go-to. Hopefully not again, but has always been my first go-to. So, you know, growing up, I never really, it's like you hear a lot, man, you start drinking and using early, it's like you never really develop emotionally, psychologically, you know what I mean? You never really develop, and the longer I stay sober, the reality is I see how underdeveloped I really am emotionally and psychologically, you know what I mean? And so, you know, running through life, loaded for a lot of years, man, a lot of years. High school, you know, surfing, skating, fighting, and fornicating seemed to be the things that I love to do best. You know, yeah, you know, and whatever fell in line with those things and that way of life was great. We nourished those things, but whatever didn't fall in line with those things, seemed we had this uncanny ability to just kind of destroy. You know, whether that be relationships, opportunities. You know, it didn't matter if it wasn't a part of the lifestyle that my friends and I seemed to be pushing towards. We wanted no part of it. Family, it didn't matter. It didn't matter whatever it was. If it didn't fall in line with those things, then they weren't important to us, and we didn't put any effort or energy into maintaining or prospering in those areas. So I never finished high school. You know, I went to work real early. My dad was a masonry contractor in the area. And we worked hard, and luckily, he employed my best friends as well. So I got to hang out with the guys that I partied with and called my friends, as well as worked hard with them. And we worked hard and we played hard, you know, from a young age. And I never really got, because of that, I never really got a sense of accomplishment that people that tend to graduate, just that experience of graduating high school. I never got to experience that, you know what I mean? And like, stay sober and you start to experience some things, you start to see what you really missed out on. And you know what I mean? Important things that could have helped mold me in a positive direction that I missed out on because I thought these other things were so much cooler than that, you know what I mean? And so I missed out on a lot of things. I missed out on good opportunities in life. I missed out on healthy relationships. And I had, for the most part, I have a good family. My dad's side of the family, man, for the most part, with a couple exceptions, they live by spiritual principles that I had to be taught of out of a book and off a wall. And by your example, they just tend to live by these principles because they know it's the right thing to do. You know what I mean? It's like they don't have to be this is the direction that you should walk. They walk in that direction because they know that that's the direction a human should walk in, you know. But I fell off the tree and rolled way down the hill. I have no idea what I like is. So I don't know, man. I put a lot of power and shame and guilt into the events in my life that I should have shared with somebody, you know, and gotten over these things. But as a child, I don't know that process. I never was told those things, you know what I mean? It's like, a lot of us come from dysfunctional families. And like I said, my mom raised me, which in her family, and a lot different than my dad's side of the family. Just a lot different people and how they deal with things. And I didn't know that there was a way through these things, you know, to the other side of them. I wasn't taught that. And so I carried a lot of these burdens with me. And and it's like one of the biggest things was I was molested as a child by a male family member, you know, and I put a lot of shame, like I had something wrong to do with that, you know what I mean? Like that was my burden to carry, you know what I mean? And I carried that for a long time until I shared that with Daryl in first couple years of sobriety. I had never told anybody that. And so I carried that weight for a lot of years, and just like healthy activities and psyche mold us into people, like dysfunction molds us into people as well. Just like a potter on the wheel, you know, with his little bowl of clay, and he just molded, and these things molded me into a very dysfunctional, self-centered individual. And but I couldn't see it, because all I can see is me, you know? All I can see is how I feel and what's going on with me and what I want and what I think I need. And I pretty much run through my whole life living like that. Pretty much run through my whole life like that. And at 19 years old, my girlfriend at the time, which came to be my wife, we had a baby girl right before I turned 20. And that was pretty heavy partying, I guess we like to call it, but it's not really partying. There's no party involved, you know what I mean? It's just, it's a destructive lifestyle, you know what I mean? It's like a party, you go somewhere, you have fun, then you go home and you begin, and then you maintain some sort of functioning life, right? There was no real functioning or normality about it. It's just my whole life seemed to be drinking and using from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to sleep. And then I would attempt to hold down a job and to raise a daughter in this. Like, this was more getting in the way of things that I thought I wanted for my life than it was being a beautiful part of. You know what I mean? And June 13th, 1996, I was 19 years old. My daughter was born that day. There were some complications going on in the delivery room, and saw some things in there that I thought I would never see. And I hope I never see again, to be honest with you. I hope I never see that again. But no, it was a beautiful experience. Anybody who's had a child or been a part of watching their child, it's a beautiful experience. It is. It's kind of an emotional blackout because I wasn't processing it. I wasn't really processing what was going on the whole time until later. But like, so as I'm holding this gift of life, my beautiful daughter in my arms, the very first thought that came to my head is, I want to go home and get loaded. Like, and I'm holding the most beautiful, precious thing that a man could ever be a part of in my arms, and all I could think about is going home and getting loaded, you know? And in that moment, I knew I had a problem. I knew there was a problem in that moment at 19 years old. And I didn't do anything about it, though. And that's exactly what I did. There was some complications, so mama and baby had to stay the night, and I went home and tied one on as hard as I could that night. And just completely disconnected. And I look back at that and I think, damn, how sad, man. You're just part of the most beautiful thing that you could probably ever be a part of in your life. And you just wanted to escape from it, you know? And I, like I said, that's kind of how I've lived my whole life, just completely oblivious to the reality, you know, just completely oblivious to what I'm a part of and how I'm affecting people and what I'm putting in and what I'm putting out, you know? And I went home and tied one on that night, and I continued to drink and use as much as possible, as well as try and maintain some illusion of control, because my wife was very concerned. She began to get very concerned. I mean, you can't raise a family and be in the environment of having your buddies over till 12, 1 o'clock at night, blaring punk rock music, fucking, you know, just like obnoxious people. You can't raise a family in that environment. It doesn't last very long, you know what I mean? And that's exactly what I was seemingly attempting to do. And she got very concerned, and one night we kind of were at odds, and I tell you, I never thought that I could physically harm a woman like that, but it got pretty bad that night. It got pretty bad, and I was out of my head, and I had no idea what happened until I woke up the next morning, and my buddy and she was telling me what, and then I just went, oh my God, it's come to this, and I still did not do anything about it, you know. And at the time, my wife I moved out for a period of time, and she's like, please just get some help. She just wanted our family back together. You know what I mean? She's, please get some help. And I still had no idea what was going on with me. Still no idea of the reality of the gravity and of what I was involved in this alcoholism, this drug addiction. You know, I had no idea how tight I was in it. And so that marriage ended a while later, and I just went further down a downward spiral. And I think I was about 21, 22 years old, somewhere. I think my daughter was about 3 years old, and it just got increasingly worse, increasingly worse. Yes, time is flying by right now. The last, I want to say, 10 years of drinking and using, I don't, to be honest, remember a whole lot of details. I was in and out of incarceration a lot. I would get cleaned up, and there would come a time when I almost looked forward to getting picked up. I almost looked forward, because you get cleaned up, you know, you get a little structure, you get a little weight back on you, and you get back out there and you get hard at it. You know what I mean? It was almost like a reprieve that I even knew I needed, but it wasn't the end. There was no end in sight of what I was doing, you know? And I ended up gathering a lot of different charges, alcohol-related, drug-related, felonies. It must have been 2008 or something, or 2009. I had gotten into a bunch of trouble, and the people of the state of California were so convinced that I needed to be in 12-step programs that they had me getting these court cards signed while incarcerated. You know, like, you go to these little things incarcerated and you get your card signed. And I still had no idea. And actually, I had my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting was in the lovely care of the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department. And this gentleman named Doc from the Five Cities actually came down there and carried the message to us. And I love that man and his story. And I remember, I think he must have asked me to read chapter 5. That we read in a lot of the meetings, and I remember reading that, just seeing myself for the first time and all that, you know. It's like, oh my God, this is me. And every time I read that or hear it read in meetings, I'm still like, oh my God, that is me, you know what I mean? And today, that is me sober, like, oh, like the insanity, you know what I mean? It's like, fuck. But no, I remember hearing that, and it was like a wrecking ball that had broken through the lies and just deceit that I had built up around myself for so many years, just this reading, this simple reading of chapter 5, just how it was immediately connecting to me. And I was just like, oh my God. And I stayed sober for, I think it was like 6 months in 2009. I think it was 2009. And I had gotten I was doing meetings over here at the Alano Club on Ben Wiley, you know, and over here at the 1600 Club. The 1600 Club is my home. This is my home. But I remember doing a lot of meetings over there, and I met Daryl and I met a lot of you guys over there and here too. And I think I asked I asked another Randy R, to be my sponsor. Good dude, man. I think he had like 4 or 5 years of sobriety at the time, and I was ready mostly, but I wasn't really gonna involve the whole God thing into it. I was gonna try to leave that out because it just seemed too big for me. And I'd gotten a job out at in Merced. My aunt and uncle own a construction company. We got a job at the University of Merced, building dorm rooms, making amazing money out there. And I lasted probably like 2 days, and I was on a crew of like 40 guys, and we lived in two houses way out in the sticks, and it was just a giant party every night after work. This giant party. You know, I had no defense. I lasted 1 day, I think. And the next day I was drinking and coming home eventually on the weekend, and I making great money. And I really didn't have to spend any of it because like our housing, it was like kind of all taken care of for us. And so I was making great money, and I was drinking a lot out there. But I was listening during those times I was going to meetings. And the thing that you guys talked about, that obsession of the mind, right? I started to grasp that because I remember waking up early, we'd wake up early, go to work, and I remember by like 9 o'clock in the morning, I can't wait to get off work and take a drink. And I never caught myself thinking that before, you know what I mean? But I caught myself thinking that this time, and I was like, oh my God, that's what these people are talking about. You know what I mean? That's what they're talking about. And I knew I was an alcoholic. Like I said, I knew on June 13th, 1996, that I had a problem. I knew I had an issue with alcohol. But as I listened, and then my experience again became that these things started to become reality, these things that you were talking about, and I was paying attention to them. I was like, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. And so I started coming home. The job lasted about 5 months, So I started coming home and using on the weekends, and then I was having to take it to work with me, and then I was needing it at work all week to get through the work week, you know what I mean? And by the time I got laid off that job, I think it was like $14,000-$15,000 in uncashed payroll checks at my disposal, right? And so what do? Went on a sick run, you know what I mean? I just got laid off, and all this money, you know what I mean? I have no responsibility. Well, in my eyes, I have a child. What do you mean you have no responsibilities? You know what I mean? You have tons of responsibilities. You're just an ignorant asshole not taking care of any of them. And so I went on a run, man. And I think I spent that money, and it was probably 4 or 5, maybe 6 weeks right before Christmas of 2009. I had spent all that money. I was back into felonious behaviors. You know, back into doing whatever I have to do to keep the ball rolling, to keep me in some state of coherency on any given day. And I got into a lot of trouble one more time. And right after Christmas, I had gotten picked up on this active investigation they had down in Santa Barbara, because this place was way too hot. I'm moving down to Santa Barbara for this stuff now. And I got picked up quick down there, man. And what's funny is, man, is this is where I started to pay attention to God working in my life. And I didn't even believe that God worked like this in a real way. But man, okay, so they had my name wrong on the docket down there, right? And I went into court, and the name was wrong on the docket, and they OR'd me, and I'm like, no. This is my name. You need to find me in your system. And they found me. And by this time, I'd already gone to court a couple times. And rather than doing so, I'm sorry, I guess I should backtrack a little. At that time, I was ready. I was ready to get sober, to get clean, and to try something new. because I saw that at that time, at the end of 2009, the beginning of 2010, the party was over. There was no more. It was either I'm going to do something else, and I had been listening to you guys, or I'm going to die doing this, or I'm going to die doing this. And there was a couple of times that in the insanity of that lifestyle that I had put my life on the line to get and stay loaded, to do what I had to do to get and stay loaded. I was willing to put not only my freedom, but my own physical life on the line to get and stay loaded. And that really kind of concerned me about me in this, you know what I mean? Like, this kind of concerning that you're willing to die for this, you know? You're willing to put your own life on the line to continue this. That's very concerning, Joseph. And so by the time my sobriety date is January 7th, 2010, and I got to Alcoholics Anonymous one more time, and I was ready. I was broken. I had no answers. I had no questions. Just show me what to do. Just show me what to do. And that's when I think shortly after that I hooked up with Daryl, and at that time, Daryl was doing a lot of meetings at the time, and then Daryl's life got busy and work exploded for him, and I'm not at work. I'm in meetings all day. And I think I need a sponsor that I need to see all day, right? Like, he's got nothing better to do. So I was like, Daryl, I need to find a new sponsor. He's like, cool, man, you got to do what you got to do. And so I went to a couple of the guys. I went here, I went there. And finally, I remember at one year of sobriety, I'm like, Daryl, I need your help. He says, you need to stop jumping around from sponsor to sponsor. And basically, you need to grow some roots. And you need to settle down and you need to start doing this thing. And so ever since about a year of sobriety, Daryl's been my sponsor. And like today, it's not so much that I need to call Daryl and ask him about every decision that I need to make in my life. I use Daryl, Joe, Victor, Billy, I use your examples of how you conduct yourself in the decision-making process that I need to make in every day. You know, I don't need to call you. I mean, that happened a lot in early sobriety, especially dealing with my daughter, who when I got sober was 13 years old, and I had no idea what it was to be a father. No idea. And every back talk, every thing that I got to deal with her seemed like an overwhelming task to me, because I had forgotten what it was to be a father. I had abandoned her, you know, at a very young age, and the lifestyle I lived, there's no room for being a father in this lifestyle. So when I got sober, man, there was a lot, and a lot of calling Daryl was, I don't know what to do here. I don't know how to do this. This is too hard for me. And I'd be crying on the phone, and he'd be like, is it better than it was when you got here? And be like, yeah, I guess so. He's like, well, just keep pushing forward. It's what we do. What, do I want it to be perfect overnight? Of course I do. Of course I do. Of course I do. From what I hear from you, you do too. You know what I mean? We want it perfect overnight. We want one simple amends and then everything to fall back in our direction, right? It's just not how life works, man. In fact, and my dad's always taught me, if there's anything worth having in life, you're going to have to work for it. And that's one thing that my father instilled in me was strong work ethics. You know, in all of life, and just like I've used Daryl as an example, I've had other positive role models in my life. My father, who had to love me at times from a distance, but never turned his back on me. He never turned his back on me, and my Uncle Bill, the owner of the construction company I work for. How these men conduct themselves in their families, in public, in the things that they're a part of. Is my living example of what it is to be a man, of what it is to be a man, and what is my concept of what a man is, and how do I implement and apply these principles into my everyday living? That's what I draw upon your experience in, man. I don't have to figure out how to reinvent the wheel here. I just follow the example of the man that I see walking this in how to do this. You know what I mean? And thank God I haven't had to figure any of this out by myself. Because of and by myself, I'm a runner, I'm a liar, I'm a cheater, I'm a thief. I tend to destroy things more than I tend to build them. You know what I mean? And I don't have to figure any of it out. And I'll tell you honestly, working the steps, I think, I don't know that any step is more important than, I think it's important to work the one in front of the next one, you know, properly and wholeheartedly. And I didn't know that until I had worked some steps, not so wholeheartedly, not so honestly, you know what I mean? And as you stay sober and you start to see how some of these things are still molding you and still somewhat dictating your thought process and your decision making in sobriety, how some of this stuff has still got a hold on you, and you start to see, I need to get honest about some things here. You know what I mean? I'm not done here. And I think the only way a guy like me really learns is by learning the hard way. You know what I mean? Learning what not to do by doing what not to do first. and that's just how I learn, man. And I thank God that I've stayed sober as long as I have to learn what I've learned to push me into a forward trajectory in this thing. Because there's been many times when I haven't always been choosing to walk forward in this. I just kind of stay at a standstill. Yeah, that looks good for you. That's a little too healthy for me, though. You know what I mean? I'd like to have that, but I don't want to do the work to get it, so I'm just not going to address it. You know what I mean? And that kind of stuff plagues me, man. It can be a dangerous thing for me to say I'm okay right where I stand right now. I always need to be pushing myself forward in this. Always need to be pushing forward. And when I fall short and when I fall on my face, thank God you guys are there to pick me back up, help dust me off, and show me how to keep walking forward, man. Thank God I have you guys as my examples, because I cannot do this alone. If you're new, man, I'm not going to go through each step. I can't tell you, and you'll hear George L. says it all the time, man. If you don't work the steps, you'll never know what the F it is that you're going to get out of the steps if you don't work the steps. You know what I mean? And I'm a firm believer of that. A lot of times we come in here way too cool to think that we got to work steps off a wall with another individual and get honest about who we are, right? That terminal coolness will absolutely kill us in here, and what I've seen. So I'm grateful that I wasn't too cool to do what you guys suggested. Get a sponsor, go to meetings, be of service. Be of service to you. Wash your coffee cups. I don't even like you. I don't even like you, dude. I don't like what you say in meetings. I don't like the car you drive, what you wear. Like, I don't even like you. But what I realize is this has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with what I'm trying to do with me. You know what I mean? And so everything I do in Alcoholics Anonymous is to one end. Freedom. Freedom. And if you're not here for freedom, what are you here for? You know, what are you here for? How are you doing inside? You know what I mean? They say this is an inside job. How you doing inside, Victor? Good. 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 Right when I got here, Victor's like, I'm your sponsor. I didn't know any better. I'm like, okay, man, whatever I do, whatever you do, whatever you say, I don't know what I'm doing here. You know what I mean? I don't know what to do. But when I had to ask Daryl, when I had to conjure up the fucking courage to ask a man to help me, to walk me through this, whatever this is, whatever you're talking about here, I know I'm ready. I have no idea what it is, but I had to ask this man to help me. That was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. And it should be one of the easiest things I ever do in my life is to ask you for your help. I'm like a walking contradiction on most days. You know what I mean? Like a walking contradiction, man. I can't conjure up the courage to do a simple thing, to walk in a healthy place, but yet I can put all my energy into dysfunctional, harmful things that are going to destroy me internally. You know what I mean? And I don't know what that is. The human psyche is a trip, man. Because this thing, like I was sharing, is like you would think this self-centered individual would love this, right? Half the allure of your attention is me drawing it to me. You know what I mean? But when it's already given to me up here, it's like, what the hell am I going to do with this? You know what I mean? What am I doing up here? You know what I mean? So, man, I'm just grateful. Like I said, there's a lot of people in here that I really care about tonight, man. people that have shared intimate moments of their lives with me that maybe have shared with one, maybe no other people on this planet, and I've shared with them, you know? People that, in spite of the sickness I was engaging in sober, loved me and never turned their back on me, you know? Those are the examples that I want to reciprocate to the people that have come in behind me, you know? I've never had a stronger desire than I do today to be the example that you guys have been for me to the man coming in behind me. The example of living the 12 steps. I have never had a stronger desire than I do today to be that example. And that, I guess, is a miracle, because that is the exact opposite of the mentality of self-centered individual that I come in as. Thank you for letting me share.
All right. Yeah, let's give Joseph another round, huh?